हरे हरे गोपीचन बालभद्र हरे गोपीचन बालभद्र हरे यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीर वन यमुना तीर वन हय राध माधव कुंज विहारे हय राध माधव कुंज विहारे
Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Bhagavad Gita, Sri Shrimati's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai, Samavir Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to some of the devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasad Bhagavad Gita. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nikinamani Namaste Sarasadeva and Gauravani Kacharni Nirvishesha Shunyavari Hastasadi Sikarani. We are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text 23, which is a 4823, which is a verse spoken by Mother Suniti. Okay. This is today, of course, is Mother's Day. So I'm going to first read a verse spoken by one of the great mothers in the Srimad Bhagavatam, who is Mother Suniti. As most of you know, Dhruva Maharaj felt very insulted because his stepmother, the favorite wife of the queen, would not allow him to sit on his father's, on his lap. He became very insulted, and he wanted to gain some power, some revenge, get his rightful place. And his mother preached to him very, very nicely. And finally, of course, we know he goes off to the forest at 5 years old, does great austerities, sees the personality of Godhead, is instructed by Narada Muni, and achieves greatness. So, Suniti, his mother, actually gives several very nice verses in the 8th chapter, giving nice instruction to him about what to do when one is in a distressed condition like he was, feeling very insulted, feeling very bereft. And she gives him the wonderful instruction to simply take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she says, Nanyam tata padham palashalochanad dukha chidham te mrigayami kanchana yo mrigyate hasta grihita padmaya triyetarayar anga yamrigayan manaya. My dear Dhruva, as far as I am concerned, I do not find anyone who can mitigate your distress but the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes are like lotus petals. Many demigods, such as Lord Brahma, seek the pleasure of the Goddess of Fortune, but the Goddess of Fortune herself, with a lotus flower in her hand, is already ready to render service to the Supreme Lord. Now, I'm only reading part of the purport. It's fairly long. Suniti pointed out herewith that the benediction received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and received from the demigods are not on an equal level. Foolish persons say that no matter whom one worships, one will get the same result. And actually, that is not a fact. Therefore, Suniti told her son that he should not seek the mercy of the demigods, but should directly approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead to mitigate his misery. In other words, Suniti is here giving him the direction. giving him the guidance and saying, this is who you need to worship for whatever you wish. Prabhupada says, and anyone, therefore, who takes to the worship of the Supreme Lord automatically receives the blessing of the Goddess of Fortune. At this stage of his life, Dhruva Maharaj was seeking material opulences, and his mother advised him rightly that even for material opulences, it is better not to worship the demigods, but the Supreme Lord. Although a pure devotee does not seek benediction from the Supreme Lord for material advancement, it is stated in Bhagavad Gita that pious persons go to the Lord even for material benedictions. Suniti, the mother of Dhruva, was a far-seeing woman, and therefore she advised her son to worship the Supreme Lord and no one else. The Lord is described herein as lotus-eyed, padmapalacha, lochanat. And a person is fatigued, if he sees the lotus flower, all his fatigue can be immediately reduced to nil. Similarly, when an aggrieved person sees the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately all his grief is reduced. So, today is Mother's Day, and I always like to give classes on these different holidays because I find there's a lot of spiritual import to all of them, whether it be St. Patrick's Day or whatever it may be. But today is especially important because the role and the service of a mother is very much part of our culture. Now, even in our particular Western culture that we're living in, the role or the service of a mother is recognized as something very special. People know that there's some special quality about the mother, and not only that, there's a great debt that all of us have to our mothers. Our mothers gave birth to us, they reared us, they educated us, they trained us in so many ways. And so we see in this verse that Suniti is directly instructing Dhruva in spiritual knowledge. So we'll come back to Dhruva a little bit later. But let's talk a little bit more about the role of mother from the perspective of our Shastra. Now, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself expressed this about his mother Sachimata. This is from Chaitanya Mangala, Majjha chapter 28. Sachimata understood that it was time for her son to leave home, so she waited, sitting at the door. Seeing his mother at the door, the Lord sat down next to her and held her hands. He tried to console her, saying, "You brought me up and took care of me in plentiful ways. I was educated and properly raised due to your endeavors. You never bothered for even a bit of tiny pleasure for yourself, but all through, since my birth, you always made sure that I had the best of everything. Moment to moment, you increasingly showered me with your love and affection. Even in a million of lifetimes, I will never be able to reciprocate your tender feelings. Life after life, I will be in your debt, which only you, by your grace, can waive." So even Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is expressing this great debt he feels to his mother. Now, the things he is saying are very interesting. Because he's not just saying, you know, you gave me spiritual instruction, although she did. You all remember the story of the clay pot where he's trying out some impersonal philosophy on Mother Sachi. She's not going for it, and she sets him straight because she has the proper understanding of philosophy. But he's not just saying that. He's acknowledging the care the mother gives, raising, educating, protecting. He also is acknowledging the emotional care. He says, "The love and affection you gave me and the tender feelings I can never repay." So this is very important. It's this emotional well-being that the mother imparts to the child. The child feels protected. The child feels cared for. The child feels loved. Therefore, this is a great start for them. They become happy in their lives. They are well-balanced. They are healthy individuals. And therefore, they can easily take up spiritual life with the right instruction, given this strong foundation. Now, this love we see in great devotees like Sachimata, but it's not just in great devotees. We see this even in more ordinary people. Srila Prabhupada describes the mother's love, even an ordinary mother, as the closest to true love in the material world. Prabhupada says in the teachings of Queen Kunti, chapter 14, if one loves Krishna as one's child, then we'll have such a privilege. He's talking about his mother, Yashoda. Because the mother has the most love for the child. Even in the material world, there's no comparison to a mother's love For a mother's love loves her child without any expectation of return. So why is a mother's love the purest? Because it is the most selfless. Prabhupada says she does not expect return. Now, of course, things have changed a little bit in Kali Yuga, because sometimes we see mothers do not act quite so well as this ideal. But nevertheless, most mothers do portray this. And we see all the time how a mother will, well, not we see all the time, but you hear about or you read about a mother will do some extraordinary thing to protect her child, do practically anything for their benefit. In fact, it's not even just human beings. Even you see animal mothers are like this, are very protective. Over where I live, we have a cow that has this calf. Calf is 3 years old and practically twice as big as she is, or 5 years old. And she still licks the cow, and the cow will try to nurse her from her like this, even though it's fully grown, much bigger than her. But it's still, this mother cow is treating this other cow as her child and trying to give it protection and care. It's actually quite sweet to see how the mother cow will act this way, and other animals as well. Of course, human beings, it's a little more advanced, a little more developed. So in the material world, usually the birth mother is acknowledged. In Mother's Day, we mainly just acknowledge the one who gave us birth. But the Vedic system is much broader. We were talking about the cows. Yes, the cow is accepted as mother. In fact, there are seven mothers in the Vedic system. Prabhupada, this is from one of his room conversations, says we are coming from material nature. That means material nature is our mother. From the womb of the mother, the child comes. According to Vedic knowledge, this earth is also mother. We have got seven mothers according to Vedic civilization. Original mother, the real mother, the wife of the teacher, the wife of the guru, the wife of the Brahmin. The queen is also considered mother. And Dhenu means cow, mother, because we drink her milk. Then he quotes from Chanaka Pandit from the Niti Shastras. I was trying to look up the verses for the seven mothers, and I didn't really see anything in our Vaishnava literature. This is from Chanaka Pandit, and although it's not exactly a Vaishnava literature, the Niti Shastras, Prabhupada does quote it, and he quotes the verse in entirety, so it's appropriate here. Atma Mata Guru Patin Brahmani Raja Patnika Dainur Dhaptri Tata Pritvi Saptaita Matara Smrita. One's own mother, the wife of the guru, the wife of the Brahmin, the wife of the king, the cow, the nurse, and the earth are known as the seven mothers of a man. So these are all important. You see that all of them play the role of a mother. They are giving life, or they are nurturing, like the nurse, the cow, giving milk. They are giving education, such as the wife of the guru or the wife of the Brahmin, or giving protection, like the wife of the king. And of course, the earth does all of these things. The earth gives us nurturing and protection. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually explained all of these things, talking about the role of the mother. And many of us, myself, I experienced this with my own mother. Although she was not spiritual and did not really give me spiritual knowledge, she gave me this nurturing and kindness and took care of me well. And I feel very fortunate and grateful for that part of my life. Now, fortunately, I had a new mother and father. The Vedas is my mother and Srila Prabhupada is my father. They gave me spiritual life. That's that's called being second born, the Brahminical initiation. So, but still, we can acknowledge and we can appreciate the father and mother from our birth if they did a good job and they did their best trying to raise us, at least took care of us, did the basics. Now, I was not so fortunate that my own mother didn't really give me spiritual knowledge of any kind, but many of our younger devotees are born into this movement, are born as devotees, and many of our Indian members had families, members who at least had some knowledge of Krishna, perhaps, or had some higher religious sentiments. And of course, we have now not only second generation devotees, but we have third generation devotees. Many of our Gurukula students here at Vanna are third generation, and there's even one or two fourth generations around now. So those children are very fortunate, because they have mothers who are also among the first to give spiritual instruction and practice. When you think about it, where does one first learn anything about the world? From the mother. The mother is generally the primary caregiver and gives this kind of instruction. Now, of course, the Father may also play an important role, but you get your day next month in June. Today, we're going to focus on the Mother. So, actually, the real duty of the Father and Mother is spiritual instruction. As well as all of these things we talked about, the nurturing, the caring, the raising, the rearing of the child in a good atmosphere, it also should give the spiritual instruction. In fact, this is a not just a recommendation, this is an order. Our Lord Rishabhadev gives in 5.5.18, one cannot deliver his dependents, one who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipful demigod. So, becoming a father, becoming a mother is a great responsibility. Of course, it's a great pleasure in many ways, and many people find happiness and fulfillment from parenthood, but it is a great spiritual responsibility. Because we have that responsibility to deliver our dependents in the path of repeated birth and death. Now, what does that mean? How can we possibly do that? Simply by giving them Krishna consciousness. Simply by doing our best to provide the opportunity for every living entity, and particularly those who are directly under our charge, to be able to hear about Krishna, to understand Krishna, to be exposed to this philosophy. I see so many parents. They bring their children to the temple. The children are bowing down in front of Srila Prabhupada, to the deities. They're chanting Hare Krishna. They're hearing some philosophy. That's enough. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. Prabhupada said, children, they do what we do. You simply bring them and they imitate. You're a devotee, they become a devotee naturally. It's not difficult. It's not something that's very, very difficult to somehow or another make a child a devotee. No, it's natural to the soul. So if they have a good experience in Krishna consciousness, they have nice parents, they have nice association, a nice school environment, they naturally become devotees. So we're able to fulfill this obligation to the Supreme Lord in this incarnation, Lord Rishabhadev has told us. I was also thinking that the seven mothers mentioned the wife of the Brahman or the wife of the guru or the teacher. But actually, because of the way things are now in our particular society and culture, often the teacher or the Brahmin may be a woman who is also a mother. So I was thinking about our many devotee children who have been given instruction by their teachers and who have been given spiritual knowledge as well as material knowledge from their female teachers, who they all, of course, address as mother. They all say mother so-and-so, because they are acting as the mother. Not only the mother, just because Prabhupada said we should address all women as mother, or think of all women as mother, but they actually are acting as a mother, because they're acting in the same way as the wife of the Brahman, the wife of the guru. In other words, one who gives spiritual knowledge and gives that nurturing and gives that help to the child. So we should also acknowledge and remember all of these women, whether they be actual birth mothers or not, who are giving this kind of nurturing and knowledge to our children. It's very important. Actually, last week was Teacher Appreciation Week. They have that all throughout the country. So that is actually an opportunity that you can give appreciation to your teachers. When we think about it, every personality, everyone had a mother. And every great personality had a mother. It's not that all of these wonderful personalities and great saints and sages and acharyas just sort of appeared spontaneously. They may have, but most of them were born like we were. Most of them had a mother. They had a mother and they had a father. So they all had some part in their success. The role of the mother is critical to the success of the child. There's an old expression, an English expression, or I don't know if it's American or not, that says that the hand that rules the cradle rules the world. In other words, the mother is so important to the development of the child that the hand that rocks the cradle, in other words, the mother, can be responsible for the child who may grow up to be a ruler of the world. Yeah. So we take these things very importantly. Recently, my wife and I have been watching the Abhay Charan series, that 18-hour, whatever, the biography of Prabhupada that was done many, many years ago by Bhakti Kiri Swami. And I never really got an opportunity to see it for some reason. And since a lot of us have a lot of time at home now, we've been watching it. And I'm assuming that it's fairly accurate. It's mostly based on biographical information or things that Prabhupada said or indicated about his childhood. We don't know so much about his childhood. But the way that it's depicted, at least, which I'm assuming is fairly accurate, is that Prabhupada had a wonderful childhood. It was almost idyllic. Not only was he well taken care of, his father was a fairly well-to-do cloth merchant. I mean, not rich, but I think they had some money. But they were great devotees of the Lord. In fact, Srila Prabhupada often recognized his father, Gaur Mohandas, as a pure devotee. And isn't he mentioned in one of the dedications to his books that he first taught him Mridanga and taught him to worship the deity? And anyway, Prabhupada mentions that somewhere, that gives great credit to his father helping make him a devotee. Now, also his mother was a great devotee, Ranjini. She was a very advanced devotee. She completely worked jointly with her husband, did home deity worship, the chanting, and really nicely took care of the children. And she passed away when Prabhupada was only 16 years old. And I know, and at least the way it appears, Prabhupada, you know, very distraught, very upset. This was a great loss to Prabhupada, his mother, who he deeply cared about. He was very fortunate that he had such a good father in Gaur Mohandas to continue to help him and raise him and take care of him and instruct him. So this is an example of how having a good mother and father, certainly, of course, Prabhupada is a pure devotee, sent here by Krishna for a particular mission, but part of what Krishna arranged was for him to have this good Vaishnava upbringing. So, again, very, very, very important. I was thinking about in our scriptures, we have many, many examples of mothers, many examples of women, Vaishnavis, but also examples specifically of mothers and how they played some part in devotional life. First one, of course, is Narada Muni. Narada Muni's mother was a maidservant, and there's not too much information about her giving a lot of instruction herself to Narada Muni, but she was obviously serving these great souls, the Bhaktivedantas, who were staying during the Chaturmasya time at, I guess, the inn or whatever it was where she was working and serving and giving in. And so, because she was given that opportunity and she was doing that service, Narada Muni naturally also partook in that service, and he was able to eat the remnants of the prasadam of these great devotees, and he was able to hear them speak and hear their instruction. And so he became an advanced devotee through his association, and he would not have gotten that association if not his mother had been there and sort of facilitating that association. Next one, of course, we come to Dhruva Maharaj, a 5-year-old child. We've already heard an example of some of the great instruction that Mother Suniti gave him. She's the one who led the way, who put him on the path toward spiritual life. And of course, he took it very literally and went off to the forest, became renounced, did great austerity, became an advanced devotee, came back, returned, was given all honor, took over the kingdom, ruled for many, many years, had all kinds of adventures like fighting the Yakshas, etc. And then finally, at the end, he's ready to retire. He gives up his kingdom, turns it over to his children, his sons. And then he's ready to leave his body. He goes back to the forest to do austerities. He's ready to leave his body. He's completely Krishna conscious. He's visited by none other than Nandan Sunanda, the great, great devotees from Vaikuntha. And they didn't just send, you know, just anybody. It's Nandan Sunanda, who are like personal associates of Lord Narayan. So they come to bring him back. They have a flowered airplane, a chariot ready to take him back. And he's getting on it. Wait a minute. I won't leave without my mother. He remembers his mother, Suniti. I can't leave without her. They said, don't worry. Look, she's on another airplane going with you. So, in other words, she was also, by his virtue of his devotion, she was devoted also. She was able to go as well. And Dhruva Maharaj greatly appreciate his mother, not just his mother, but as spiritually as an instructor. Now, Srila Prabhupada describes this. Let's see. I don't have the citation, but it's a couple chapters later, probably about chapter 11 or 12. Srila Prabhupada says, actually, Dhruva Maharaj's mother, Suniti, was his Patta Padarshika Guru. Patta Padarshika Guru means the guru or spiritual master who shows the way, which he did. Such a guru is sometimes called Shiksha Guru. Although Narada Muni was his Diksha Guru, initiating spiritual master, Suniti, his mother, was the first who gave him instruction in how to achieve the favor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is the duty of the Shiksha Guru or Diksha Guru to instruct the disciple in the right way, and depends upon the disciple to execute the process. For in a Shastric injunction, there is no difference between Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru. So although she was not Diksha Guru, she was on the same level. His Shiksha Guru or Patabhadarshika Guru, the one who showed him the way. Many of us as devotees, we remember the first devotee we met, and we think of them that way. It doesn't matter what they did later, or what happened to them, or what they were like, you know. That devotee who gave us Krishna consciousness, who put us on the path, that's a very special person. And we remember who that is. We remember that as our Patabhadarshika Guru. And that's what Suniti was for Dhruva Maharaj. So, can't do much better than that, having a wonderful mother to put you on the path of devotional service. Of course, some of our other great mothers from the Srimad Bhagavatam, who of course, Queen Kunti, mother of the Pandavas. We have a whole book of Prabhupada's lectures called Teachings of Queen Kunti. And from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Queen Kunti gives some of the most profound expressions of how a devotee depends upon Krishna and how a devotee deals with distress in the most advanced way. Queen Kunti is one of the most advanced devotees in our entire literature, you know, because she sets the bar very, very high. She says not only does she tolerate distress, not only does she pray to Krishna in times of distress, she says bring on more distress so that I can remember Krishna more. Now, I don't know how many of us can do that or desire to have more distress in our lives, but Queen Kunti was so advanced. So she was, of course, a great devotee, mother of the Pandavas, and a great devotee of Krishna in her own right. Now, many, of course, the great devotees that we're talking about are in this Vatsalya Rasa, or motherhood relationship, as Krishna's parents. We know Mother Yashoda, Mother Devaki, great eternal associates of Krishna, Mother Devahuti. And from Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have Sachi Mata, of course. Mother Sita, I think, is in the category of Dwaita's wife. She was there at the birth of Lord Chaitanya. She gave him the nickname Nimai, so she was very much like another mother to him. And, of course, throughout Srimad Bhagavatam, the 10th canto particularly, we have the cows. We have our mother, the cow, throughout Vrindavan Leela, always interacting with Krishna. And particularly in the Brahma Mohana Leela, the mother cows got the opportunity to have Krishna as their calves directly. So they got the opportunity to nurse Krishna as their calves and directly have him for a full year and be mothers to him. So this Vatsalya Rasa, or motherhood rasa, of course, is eternal. And it's a very, very advanced, very high rasa, so much regarded by the Vaishnavas, you know, that we have such glorification of the great devotees like Mother Yashoda throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, this continues onward. It's not just that there were great Vaishnavis 5,000 years ago and that's the end of it and there aren't any more. Oh, and in fact, in Chaitanya Leela, in the next couple generations after the Chaitanya, there were many great Vaishnavi devotees. And I just want to mention some of these. We don't always hear a lot about them. And I was studying this a little bit and just wanted to mention a few. And it's interesting that in the descriptions of how these are all women who actually acted as gurus. They were all spiritual masters in the next couple of generations after Lord Chaitanya. And some of the descriptions of them are interesting because they often are described as very motherly with their disciples. So not only were they great advanced pure devotees, they also brought this motherly quality as well, which is really nice. Janava, the wife of Nityananda, of course, is our most famous Vaishnavi guru. She had famous disciples of Ramachandra and of course Virabhadra, her son, who carried on the line and was a great devotee. It was an interesting story of Virabhadra because at first he was told that he should take initiation from his mother, Janava, and he kind of doubted that, whether that's a good thing to do for my mother. She really, you know. So he came that once, he thought she was taking bath, and he was down by the wherever there, she was taking bath, and he was walking by, and her sari fell off. And so immediately, because of her natural modesty, she manifested two other arms, her forearm form, to cover herself. So Virabhadra was pretty convinced. He said, okay, Krishna has shown me just, you know, who my mother is, or at least how advanced she is. So I certainly will take her as my spiritual master. And now, it was described that Janava was she was a very powerful Vaishnavi. She was a leader of Vaishnavs. She carried on, you know, the movement, but she didn't stand, she wasn't so much in the limelight. She didn't so much like lead kirtan or be up at the front all the time. She was a little bit more in the background. So how she loved to make prasadam and serve the devotees herself. And there was acting as a mother. She was really the guru mata. She was, you know, she was just taking care of the devotees so nicely, serving the devotees, but yet they all knew her position, gave her greatest respect. Other Vaishnavi gurus during that time, or a little bit later, Nityananda's daughter, Ganga Devi, took the side disciples. Himalata Thakurani was Srinivasacharya's daughter. And she had many disciples. I believe I saw her samadhi in Vrindavan, at one of the main temples. Do you remember which where it is? Was it in Radhadamodar? Or?
Yeah.
I think it is. I'm sure I saw Himalata Thakurani's samadhi there. Yeah, she had many disciples, and also Srinivas Acharya's wife, I think after his departure, Gauranga Priya took disciples as well. So those are some examples. Now, a little bit later, we had Krishna Priya and Vishnu Priya. These were two renunciate sisters. They never got married. They were complete renunciates, like sannyasis practically. They were daughters of Narottam Das's chief disciple, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, and they were very influential. I think there's an interesting story of another devotee named Gangamata Goswamini. I'm going to read a little bit about her. It said, her original name is Sachi. She was the daughter of a rich landowner in Kunti in Orissa, who left home to go to Vrindavan, where she took initiation from Haridas Goswami Vrindavan. So she wasn't anybody's daughter or wife, or, you know, she wasn't related to any other famous Vaishnavas. Her father was just a landowner. On the orders of her spiritual master, she went to Radhakund, where she lived for several years with her god sister, Lakshmi Priya. Afterwards, she was again instructed by her spiritual master to establish herself in Jagannath Puri, taking a so-called Chaitra Sannyas. She took up residence at the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, an important disciple of Chaitanya, during his years in Puri. When she came there, only a Shalagram Shila named Radhadamodar was being served at the house. She gradually expanded the service and installing other deities. In fact, I think the house was kind of in ruins when she came, and she had to help restore it. Sachi gave discourses on the Bhagavad Purana that attracted large audiences. The king of Orissa, Mukundadev, had a dream of Jagannath, who told him to make a donation of land for the service of the deity. Prior to this, Sachi had begged in order to maintain the service. Near the home of Sarvabhauma is a tank that is known as the White Ganges, Sweta Ganga, into which the water from the Jagannath temple, including the water which is used in bathing Jagannath, is drained. Once on the auspicious occasion for bathing in Mahavaruni, which takes place in the middle of the night, she was washed by the currents of the Ganges inside the gates of the Jagannath temple. The temple guards thought she was a thief and arrested her. The king Mukundadev again had a dream of Jagannath, who told him he should set her free. He and many of the other Sevayats of Jagannath eventually took initiation from her. So the king of Jagannath Puri took initiation from her. Because she was washed by the Ganges water, which springs from the field of Jagannath, Sachi became known by the name of Ganga Mata Goswami. Because the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is now more commonly known as Ganga Mata's Math, and one of the major houses of Vaishnavism in Puri. So we see that there have been many, many great devotees throughout our history. I was thinking there's one other category, which is mothers who heard their spiritual instruction from their sons. We're talking about mothers who gave instruction, but then there was also those who received spiritual instruction. One of the best examples, of course, is Devahuti. We have the teachings of Kapiladeva. After Kardama Muni renounced life, that was Devahuti's husband. She had a son, Kapiladeva. He stayed. It says, it's said in the Bhagavatam, he stayed to give his mother pleasure. Now, of course, Bilade, we know, is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So she is the mother, basically, of Krishna. In fact, I believe in the next lifetime she becomes Devahuti, right? I mean, sorry, Devaki. Yeah. Three births, right? Krishna Garbha, Devahuti, and then Devaki? Devahuti. Krishna, she was Krishna. I was a deity. Then they go, okay. So, he came to give his mother pleasure. So what did she do? Did she say, oh, my dear Kapila, my son, please just stay with me and let me just... No, she merely inquired about the nature of matter and spirit. She wanted to know transcendental knowledge. And Kapila then instructs her in very high Sankhya philosophy. So here again was his mother, a woman, who was instructed in some of the deepest philosophy of Vaishnavism. There's one other that I think is very interesting, and this is Uttara, the mother of Maharaj Parikrama. Now, of course, most of us, we know from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastime of Maharaj Parikrama, even before his birth, he was in the womb of his mother Uttara. Of course, Ashvatthama, the son of Drona, first of all, kills the sleeping sons of Draupadi. He wants to kill all of the descendants of the Pandus. So then he sends a Brahmastra weapon at Uttara, attempting to kill the very last descendant of the Pandus. From Arjuna, his son Abhimanyu was married to Uttara, and of course Abhimanyu was killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, and so in the womb, their son, who was Parikrama, is the last male descendant left. And of course, Krishna is about to leave. Uttara comes running to him crying, very nice verse. Pahi pahi maha yogin deva deva jagatpate nanyam kvada bayam pashe yathar mityu parasparam. O Lord of Lord, Lord of the universe, you are the greatest of mystics. Please protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. Such a nice verse that she recites. She's in the middle of this great calamity. A Brahmastra coming at her. But she immediately praises Krishna, and glorifies him. Yes, please save me. So Krishna raises the Sudarshan chakra, enters the womb, and gives protection. Of course, we all know after that, Parikrama's born, rules the kingdom. Eventually, he's cursed. He has 7 days to live. He hears the Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadeva Goswami. Now, we know the story from the Bhagavatam and then how the snake fruit comes and how he leaves his body. But there's another thing that happens in there that's, I don't think, in the Bhagavatam. After Shukadeva leaves, he's heard the Bhagavatam. Before he leaves up to his body, he's getting ready to leave his body. Mother Uttara comes to him. And she inquires from him about spiritual knowledge. She wants to hear what he, like she wasn't in the assembly. She wants to know what Shukadeva Swami taught him. She wants to hear it. And so Parikrama recites the great work, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, to her. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita is actually recited first from Parikrama Maharaj to his mother Uttara. It's called Bhagavatamrita because it's sort of, it's a totally different story, but it summarizes a lot of the philosophy and follows the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which he learned from Shukadeva Goswami. But he puts it in this very wonderful story of Gopal and, everything and all the adventures and things that he goes through. So I thought that was that was very interesting. That Uttara was there in this relationship with her son even before birth in the womb where Krishna was involved, and at the very end he instructs her in this wonderful philosophy. Yeah. So I was thinking about just to finish up here in the last few minutes to kind of fast forward to today. Or at least to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's movement and the role of women in our ISKCON society and spreading Krishna consciousness. And we know that Prabhupada so much appreciated everything that all of the women and all the men did to help him. Although we were, of course, knew very little, we were not so competent, but everything that we did, Prabhupada appreciated. I was just going to read a few letters where he talks about his sons and daughters and how he appreciated everyone equally. First, he talks about another examination. He talks about this Brahma Bhakti Shastri. Another examination we held sometime in 1971 on four books. One who will pass this examination will be awarded the title of Bhaktivedanta. I want that all of my spiritual sons and daughters will inherit this title of Bhaktivedanta. So the family transcendental diploma will continue to generations. Those possessing the title of Bhaktivedanta will be allowed to initiate disciples. Maybe by 1975, all of my disciples will be allowed to initiate and increase the numbers of generation. That is my program. Well, that was in 1969. Didn't quite happen like that. We were nowhere near advanced to take on any disciples by 1975. But nevertheless, we can see that was Prabhupada's idea, that these spiritual sons and daughters would become Bhaktivedantas, and we continue. He also said, next year, when I first came to your country, I had no idea how much American people would cooperate with my Krishna conscious mission. But now, good boys like yourself and all my other spiritual sons and daughters all around the world, they've given me great... will give me great hope that I may be able to successfully fulfill my Guru Maharaj's plan. God and Krishna have been so much merciful upon me to have given me so many nice spiritual sons and daughters as yourself. I can see by the photos of the Los Angeles temples you are good servants of Radha and Krishna, and they are very much pleased by your service. Thank you for assisting me in this way. So, besides carrying on the traditional roles of mothers and wives that women do, many women were very, very prominent in spreading Krishna consciousness throughout the world. And we all owe gratitude to those early pioneers of Krishna consciousness, the men and the women, who helped to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. I was just thinking of one story that I heard from, actually it's on one of her memory tapes too, but I remember Mark Rukmini told it. So Mark Rukmini came very early in about 1967 or 68, I believe, and joined in New York City. And she said that once she was 16 years old when she came. And Srila Prabhupada was in a little room conversation with them, and he said, all of you, you can all go out and start centers and spread Krishna consciousness. And Rukmini, all of 16 years old, you know, not even out of high school, said, Prabhupada, even the girls? And he said, yes, why not? Everyone. So this was the idea. Prabhupada engaged everyone in the Sankirtan movement. I was, again, when I was watching the Sabi Charan series, they had a lot about beginning days of the movement in London and Los Angeles and Mayapur and all the different places where Srila Prabhupada started projects. And, of course, the one that we all know so well is when he sent three couples to London to start the Krishna Conscious Movement in London. And, of course, Malati, Jamun, and Janaki were all there with their husbands. And they began that movement. And, of course, Malati had her young daughter, little Saraswati, was about 2 years old, I think, at the time. And they were all preaching, and they were all very, very involved and very active in helping to start the movement. One thing that I noticed right from the beginning, that many of our devotee women were very intelligent. They were very independent. They were very creative. They were very talented. They had all types of skills and ability. They had to be able to step a little bit outside of the mainstream of things to join the Krishna conscious movement. If you were just some non-thinking follower, who would give up material life and join this sort of interestingly different movement of Krishna consciousness, the Hare Krishna movement? So these were very special women. And because they were very strong and intelligent, they often had to be very surrendered, because they found themselves actually a little, you know, often they weren't treated that well with a little lower status and service as they might have in the outside world. And that was not due to Srila Prabhupada. We can see how he was always encouraging the women right from the beginning. But sometimes some of the men got the idea and sort of thought a little bit on the bodily conception of life. And sometimes the women were not treated as well as they should have been. But they did these sacrifices. They surrendered because they were surrendering to Srila Prabhupada. And they understood Prabhupada's mission. They understood what he wanted them to do. And made enormous contributions to preaching, to book distribution, to the deity worship. The women were always very central in the deity worship, or the cooking, etc. And often many of these women were tending children at the same time that they were doing all of these different activities. So even though they weren't always in the limelight, sometimes you see, like, Prabhupada surrounded by sannyasis and all the men. they were greatly appreciated by Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada taught us to have great respect for one another, to respect all Vaishnavas, certainly to respect all women, and to treat every woman as a mother, which means with great respect, with kindness, with protection. Prabhupada showed this in so many examples. One young woman said that she ended up coming to the door at the same time as Srila Prabhupada, and of course he has a gentleman. He opens the door for her to let his own disciple go in front of him, which of course the disciple wouldn't go in front, but because he was a gentleman, let the lady go first, and he showed to treat respectfully. Always show respect. And give kindness and protection. So Srila Prabhupada not just appreciated the mothers, the actual mothers, but so all women as mother, and taught us to see all women as mother. This is, Srila Prabhupada said, the Brahmacharya rules and regulations are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But he would go door to door for collecting alms for a spiritual master and address every woman as mother from the very beginning. From 5 years old, if a child is trained to call all women as mother, naturally his culture is different. Because he has learned to call woman as mother, he had no other idea. A small child, any woman comes before him, he knows she is my mother. So this is the practice. Not only religiously, but morally, it is so good to look upon all women as your mother. That is the system still in India. Any unknown woman who has no introduction with you, she is dressed as Mataji. Address her. She may be just like a daughter or a granddaughter, but one would address and respect the woman as mother, the Mataji. So this is the way Srila Prabhupada taught us, that we respect one another, and we certainly respect all women in the way that one would respect a mother. So sometimes, I remember many, many years ago, sometimes I remember, Mataji, like, you know, now would you talk to your mother like that? I would say, mother, you know, no. In other words, so we weren't really thinking, what does it mean? If I'm thinking someone's like my mother, what does it mean? It means I give respect, I give honor, I give, you know, and I also want to help and protect and to serve. So this is Vaishnavism. Vaishnavism means we all serve one another. Men serve women, women serve the men, younger serve older, older serve younger. We are all serving. Even disciple and spiritual master. Spiritual master is thinking, I am serving my disciple by instructing them. Disciple is thinking, I am surrendering by giving my life to my spiritual master, whatever their instruction is. So, on this day, very nice day of Mother's Day, we should remember all of the great Vaishnavis, the great women devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the great devotee women that we know, especially those senior women who have come before us and have done so much to help Srila Prabhupada's movement of Krishna consciousness. And, of course, even as we go through our succeeding second and third generations, we see all of these even younger women as mother, as Prabhupada said. So even if you're an older person, the younger women are still mother, given all respect and given all protection. So thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
If you have any question, comment, you can type it on the chat room or you can text me at 352-2100. I was also contemplating while you were reading that.
Sure.
I was trying to listen, but something reflected in me that if that natural tendency to respect the woman body as a mother, then the greatest enemy within that there is lust actually starts slowly disappearing.
That's true. In fact, that's really what Prabhupada is referring to a little bit. I didn't say it explicitly. When we say the brahmachari is, it means that he doesn't see them lustfully. You don't look at the woman in terms of an object of my enjoyment.
Yes.
You see them as mother. It's a
yes.
Different mentality. You're right.
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank
I
you very
have
much.
Another quote of Prabhupada. Even if mother becomes angry, like for an example, this is in 6.17.15 Bhagavatam. In the in the purport that Mother Parvati got angry with Chitraketu because he insulted, he said something not appropriate in front of the whole audience on Lord Shiva. So here it says, she acts as a mother should. Do not do this again. When a child misbehaves in someone else's house, she punishes the child and says, uncontrollable child, do not do this again. However, these scars did not affect Chitraketu. Rather, being born as Vikrasura increased his prem, since the devotee at the level of prem do not consider any difference between obtaining a body of a devotee or demon. But it says that this curse actually gave him the ticket to go back home, back to God. Prabhupada writes here. This punishment was a boon to Chitraketu because after taking birth as a demon Vikrasura, he was promoted directly to Vaikuntha by the mercy of Mother Parvati.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thank you. I'll go to Prabhupada.
There is a question from Mother Madhumati. Thank you, Tomohar Prabhu, for the wonderful class. Happy Mother's Day to our Mother Mantri.
Okay. Haribol.
Thank you.